This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community. Welcome to this Joy 94.9 podcast.
We want to hear from you.
It's time for our listener survey. So head to the Joy website and let us know what you love about the station and your presenters.
Maybe you'd like to share your thoughts on Joy's program production team, the volunteers behind Joy Podcasts.
The results of this survey will assist us in continuing to be the best possible station we can be.
Head to joy.org.au and have your say. Joy 94.9, your voice, your radio station.
Yes, you're an urban dreaming.
With Sarumi and Miscellaneous. It's time for dreaming.
What kind of dreaming?
Urban dreaming.
Finding your voice, finding your spirit.
No matter where you are, no matter where you go. Joy 94.9.
Yes, you're on Urban Dreaming, and tonight we have a special guest, Zachariah Green. How are you?
Good, thanks, mate. And yourself?
Good, man. And joining us in the studio right now, Miscellaneous, come on in. She's waiting for an entry. How are you?
I'm good. Hello, everyone. Sorry, I've been frantic. I've just been at the Fringe Festival watching a couple of shows there, because that's all happening at the moment. So just got back from Wick Studio, which has been amazing. Sarumi's being all over the place. We've got special guest Zach in the studios, which is very exciting.
Gallivanting the countryside. Yes, I think we both have.
We've all been all over the place.
I think we're just keeping our name real, aren't we? Us blackfellas. Doing the walkabout, you know, getting around. We're going to have, we've got Uncle Jack Charles. He's actually done the voiceover for us. So that's something to look forward to. It's pretty deadly. So,
when are we going to hear that?
We'll probably have it by next week. So
great.
You got to keep your ears tuned for that one. But, just letting you know, we've got a special guest. This is Zachariah Green. And Zachariah is actually going to be talking a bit about bush food. And he's currently writing his own book, which is awesome.
Yep.
And on that subject, we'll also be touching on a couple of things with the Pecan Summer, which is what I've been working with. A little bit of work with Miscellaneous has been doing as well. And I wanted to touch on our theme for the evening is identity. And I don't know, what does identity mean to you, Zach?
Well, I think identity means a lot to a lot of people. So it just depends how you the meaning of the word is to you. So for me, it's obviously connection to family, connection to mob, and also connection to country. So that's identity for myself, and actually knowing who you are as a person as well.
True.
And so that's a little bit about your background. So tell us, like where you're from, who's your mob, where you grew up.
We actually got a little brief on him.
It
would be nice to officially speak, you know, for him first, and then he can give us a bit more insight, I think. But have a read of that, Miscellaneous.
Oh no, you can tell us. I think it's nice for you to tell us about who you are and what.
No worries. Well, I'm a 27-year-old.
Tell me about it. Well, Miscellaneous is permanently 25.
Well, I wish I was back in my 17-year-old body. I feel like I've, ate a lot over the last couple of years. obviously, I'm a Gunjamara man and also Palawa man on my father's side. We talk about identity. I guess I've been going through cultural identity for, you know, the last 10, 15 years, because I found out I was Aboriginal when I was 12 years of age.
Yeah.
And that was quite, it wasn't daunting or anything like that, but it was just opened my eyes a little bit, because before then, obviously, I heard a lot of stuff about Aboriginal people and apparently how we're all related, and obviously we are connected somehow or another. But it really opened my eyes, and I guess, you know, finding out I was Aboriginal when I was 12 years of age, it was a massive secret in our family where my grandmother wasn't allowed to say she was Aboriginal.
Yeah.
When obviously my father, my uncle, and also my aunties growing up, it was at that point where, you know, back in the day she wasn't allowed to say anything. But then, you know, just early last year we found out my grandfather was actually Aboriginal my nana's husband, and we found out that he was actually, you know, violent towards her because he found out she was Aboriginal. But the backstory is he got taken away at such a young age from Flinders Island off the coast of Tasmania. Yeah. And he was actually, you know, brought up in a white family, and he was actually made to hate his own people.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of I think that's a huge effect to a lot of our people, and I think out there we tend to forget that, you know, the colonization has affected us in a myriad of ways, and particularly around, you know, the Tasmanian Aboriginal people and the Palawa people, that, you know, Tammy Anderson and you know, that for, to name a few, and a couple of my mates that live there, and you know, it's a particularly hard thing to deal with, because I know my mum's generation was the same thing. Was that it was a shame to be Aboriginal. And so the effects of that is that there's a lot of people out there that, one, either don't know about their Aboriginality, or two, are ashamed to know their culture as well, is because they saw it as a shame. Do you know what I mean? It was a shame job.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think we tend to forget, when we are talking about the effects of colonization, that there was a huge generation of Aboriginal people that were ashamed to be Aboriginal. And, you know, it wasn't their choice. It was just that their parents told them to not be Aboriginal because it's going to be safer for you, you know, or that, you know, it's a bad thing or whatever it was. But it's a huge effect. And, you know, I think it's not spoken about within our community very much.
No, and I guess, like, with anyone, like, for myself growing up, like, I always wanted to know who my family were, like, especially the Gunjamara line. And obviously I found out who my family were down the track. And, you know, my great-grandmother's last name is a Thomas, and Thomas is obviously a prominent name within the Gunjamara mob. But it was almost at that point growing up, you know, the last couple of years I've been able to really, really appreciate my Aboriginal culture.
Yeah.
Obviously, my grandmother at the moment, and she's still alive, and she's in her mid-80s. Like, is at that point where she still doesn't recognise herself as an Aboriginal woman. And and I guess that's, you know, my father-in-law, himself being an Aboriginal prominent Aboriginal man, his mother obviously always used to say that she was actually Spanish.
Yeah.
Because she never wanted to recognize as an Aboriginal person. And until, like, you know, the last couple, like, pretty much the last 5-10 years, she's been able to recognize that. But, you know, back in the day, she always used to tell my father-in-law, just say you're Spanish. And it's at that point, and it's really sad, and it still happens today. So
It's something that we are constantly going through.
Yeah.
All our, since the 1788, man, when it first, our country was apparently settled, you know, when it was originally, 100, maybe they say about 60,000, but it's been proven 100,000 years ago. The first Nations people were on this country, you know, and at the time of the, you know, people taken over and completely treating Aboriginal people like animals, and they weren't even classified as human beings. They were classified as flora and fauna. And still to this day, we're still fighting for our rights as human beings, you know. And it is changing. There's a change in the air.
Mm.
There's a bit of positivity. And that's, you know, that's one thing about this show specifically, is we try to say that we are having to make another way of bridging the gap to make us, you know, somehow realize that we can try. We never forget the past. That's just the thing. We never will. But we have to try to move on as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But when we say moving on, it's not as easy, because there are, like you say, your parents, grandparents who have had to see this, and, you know, a lot of our own mob have had to see what's happened from the very beginning.
Mm.
And so it's hard to forgive, you know. But I think in regards to what you were saying about wanting to find out, you wanted to find out who your mob were, your identity.
Mm-hmm.
It's so important, because that's something that our spirit tends to want to do anyway, because the especially the stolen generation children, it's taken them so long, but they've eventually found, a lot of them have found their families again.
Yeah.
And a good example of that is Pecan Summer, which we were just performing in Sydney Opera House. Mm. Deborah Cheatham was the writer for this particular opera, the first Indigenous opera.
Yeah.
And it touches on the 1939 Cummeragunga mission, where 200 Aboriginal women, men and children crossed the Murray River from the New South Wales and walked 75 kilometres to Shepparton in Victoria to protest the harsh conditions on the mission. And it was their first mass strike by Aboriginal people and triggered a new phase of Aboriginal political activism across Australia. And this opera actually begins in Yorta Yorta language. So it's language from this country, from this nations, and which was forbidden, which we spoke about before. The language was forbidden. We weren't allowed to speak our languages because with language, with understanding and with education, that's I guess, a sense of power.
Mm.
And giving people power, it's you know, it can work against you as well.
And so. I guess those stories need to be told. You know, every year a new story is coming out, which is fantastic. And obviously you talk about the opera as well. But, you know, I think back last year, a show you were involved, Secret River, that obviously, you know, that dwelled into the First Contact. And that was such a powerful story where people needed to know what happened back then. And obviously when, you know, he put his stick down and said, "My land," but then obviously the local mob came over and said, you know, in their own language. So is that, you know, I think we're still facing those barriers at the moment. And I guess we live in a world where everyone's on their phones and it's like that social media. So, you know, someone will capture, you know, a fight between two Aboriginal people and then put it all over Facebook, and then it all becomes this massive thing where all Aboriginal people are violent towards each other. And, you know, social media is such this amplified place where you would say stuff to someone but you would never say it to their face. Mm. And I guess, like, you know, social media can be a powerful tool but can also be, you know, like an evil tool as well.
Absolutely. Sure. But I think, you know... at the end of the day, I think, as we've said, and what's so great about this show is I think the more of our voices are out there, then the more powerful it can be for our people, and the more of we can get our voice out there. Yeah. Because a lot of the time, you know, it's not representative of who we are. So exactly. I think we have to get in positions of power, like Sarami is saying.
You can find more Joycasts and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
Yes, you're on Joy 94.9. This is Urban Dreaming with Sarami and...
Miscellaneous.
And our special guest, Zachariah Green.
Hey, how are you?
Or otherwise known as Zachary Green. So, Zachary Green, just so we know, this fella, he's actually born in the southeastern suburbs of Melbourne.
Yeah.
And he's a proud Gunditjmara and Palawar man. And he's on his father's side, that is.
Yep.
Is your mother's side?
Nah, mum's Norwegian, so that's where I get the blonde hair and white skin.
Ah, so. You could be passed for a desert breed, yeah?
Yeah.
And he's currently a program coordinator for the National Indigenous Culinary Institute in Melbourne.
Yes.
And for those who don't know, Zachariah is actually writing a book as we speak.
I am. I'm a qualified chef, Indigenous qualified chef, so I like to say that. But yeah, I'm writing a book at the moment.
So you should.
Yeah, I know. No, I'm writing the book at the moment called Our Culture, Our Food, Our Stories. So it's about the Dreamtime stories of the animals we once hunted. So if you go up to, obviously, my inspiration around it was when I travelled up to Alcohol Island last November, where my fiance is originally from, Layla. And I actually went out turtle hunting. And it was the first time I've ever been out turtle hunting, and the experience I had then was just amazing. But obviously we were lucky enough to catch a turtle, and we took it back to shore, and the sun was just coming down, and one of my Wawa's brother in Yungulways actually said to me, "Oh, listen, we've got to go home." And I said, "Well, what about the turtle?" And he turned around to me and said, "We can't actually... you know, kill it, because it's at that point where the sun's going down." So that spiritual connection between animal and human obviously is very strong. So we came back the next day and ate turtle, and I was talking to you know, a few people about books, and is there a Dreamtime book about the animals that we used to hunt, and obviously that cultural and spiritual connection between animal and man? Because obviously, being an Aboriginal person, I always thought, well, you know, something needs to be written so it can be passed through, you know, education institutes like universities, so people could learn about our cultural respect to the land. And I've been speaking to the Good Food Guide creator, Jill Duplex, around a story about, obviously, the Dreamtime book, and obviously this has come about. So Travelling around Australia within the next 2 years, collecting all these stories from elders from all different lands. So right up to the Kimberley, over to the Torres Strait Islands, over to Noongar land in Perth, and learning about the stories that the Dreamtime stories have with the animals, and then putting it through into a modern way where people can understand why Aboriginal people are so connected to land, why we have to go back to land to pay that respect to, obviously, our creators. So, yeah, it's very exciting, and obviously there's a publisher on board, so very excited about it. It was just a dream that I had, and obviously myself being an Indigenous chef, I wanted the people to be able to connect through my passion, which is food, but connecting and...
I love food.
Yeah, everyone loves food, and I guess this is where...
Too much,
this,
I think.
Oh, I think me too. Man, 98 kilos, hey, look two, out. 2Ks yeah. off 100.
Well, I'm only 50, so...
Go away. But, she's fading.
It must be a pretty big book, though, with all of those stories and...
It's going to be a two-parter.
Oh, right, so yes.
You will probably break it up from north to south.
Yeah.
So all the north stories and all the south stories.
Yeah.
So is...
And is that a recipe book as well? Is that a recipe... Like, is it going to be recipes, or is this just more about the stories and... Is that the part two? Is the recipes that come with that?
Well, it's going to be more about the stories behind the animals we hunted.
Yeah.
So I really wanted to obviously get that connection going.
Yeah.
But obviously, you know, for a lot of people out there, you know, we always talk about food, right? You go down Lygon Street, you're pretty much in Little Italy, really, learning about culture through food, Italian culture, and you hear about the stories of obviously the matriarchs out the front, how the recipes got handed down. So I really wanted to celebrate the Indigenous culture through food, and obviously this book is part of it, creating those Dreamtime stories. But obviously a lot of people, when you speak to non-Aboriginal people about Dreamtime, they think it's in the past.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
it's always keep them going and keep them going. So this is what the Dreamtime book's all about.
Yeah. Great.
It's so deadly. It's really admirable what you're doing.
Mm.
And, you know, and the fact that you said before that you've never been brought up with your culture as a, you know, when you was young. But, you know, you're wanting to just to now thrive into it, which is, you know, it's a part of who you are. And the fact that you also are pretty much married to, you know, a really strong traditional Aboriginal lady, Layla Guruwi, is that how you say it?
Guruwi, yeah.
Yes. Hello, Layla, by the way. Beautiful girl.
I hope she's listening. Is she listening? She won't be asleep, poor thing.
She'll be asleep. She'll be asleep.
But, you know, and for her to introduce you to a lot of mob as well, and to go to country, and it must be such an experience, because I know myself, I've been brought up with traditional, you know. I'm not saying fully, but I've had the chance to do that as a kid. So I seriously don't relate to you, like what you've been through. But at the same time, we've been hunting a lot as kids, and I used to be one of those kids that's always feeling sorry for the animal, and I would never want to kill the animal. And I knew it was that the purpose of it was to feed our families.
Yeah.
But I would starve if I had to, you know.
Mm.
Don't get me wrong, I loved eating good food, good tucker. But there's the moment when you see them freshly killed and just seeing that sorry eye, you know, especially from the turtle, the gorilla, we call it. And it's just like, why are we doing this, you know? And being a little one too, you know, you get real, like, sentimental and shit.
I think it's probably very different growing up in modern society, though, where, you know, everything is so packaged and is easy to do. But I think, you know, back in the old day, it's just out of necessity, and you know, you actually earned it, and it's about that respect and culturally, and you know, respecting the animal, and you know, I think nowadays, even for me, like, you know, it's easy to, you know, just eat meat out of a packet or whatever, but to actually see the slaughter process is actually really full.
But doing
on
it the
and,
right you know, way,
but
too.
Doing it the, yeah, absolutely. And
with
I
the
mean,
respect.
That's what's so great about things like halal, and you know, because there's a spirituality behind that, which a lot of, you know, people of our society don't get, and they just go to the shops and buy it in a packet, and it's all
and
right.
And also knowing when the actual the birth season is as well, yeah. when, you know, the time of, okay, you give it rest now.
Yeah, because you don't want to breed. Yeah.
You know, make them develop, let them grow.
I guess it's like, obviously, when I talk about Aboriginal culture and Aboriginal food, the sustainability that we had back in the day where yeah. obviously we had those seasons where we could hunt that animal but I always talk about it in a way where, you know, obviously writing this book, but I always talk to people about, imagine if there was a venue you could go to where it was run by Aboriginal people, you know, like obviously, you know, non-Aboriginal people were coming to eat the food, but then you realised where that food was coming from. Yeah. It was getting harvested by Aboriginal people, and then you got that whole collection where it's actually increasing Aboriginal employment through men getting those cultural jobs back, which is hunting and gathering for their families, but they're actually making employment out of it. And as I said, and I've been saying it for the last 5 years as myself being a chef, I feel the missing link between non-Aboriginal people learning about Aboriginal people is food, because, you know, you go to, like, obviously, Chinatown, right, and you eat Chinese food and you want to go to China to learn about their culture. And I feel like food is the ultimate way to non-Aboriginal people learning about our mob, because we've got these amazing stories, but they've never been put out there. And that's what I'm trying to do. I'm just trying to show the way of a different way of seeing Aboriginal people in a different light, because we always say we need education around incarceration rate or, you know, low life expectancies, and we still do need that. But in the end, no one's talking about food. And like myself being a chef, I want to bring that to light and go, bam, let's listen about the stories and how it's been passed by generation, and then people coming and talking and going, whoa, I've learnt something right off that book, and they've gone and told someone about the story that they've learnt from that book, and then it's just that domino effect where they go, now I know more about the Aboriginal culture and the sustainability. Like, imagine, like, Aboriginal people taking control back of the land in a way they're actually harvesting their own food and presenting it towards non-Aboriginal people. It'd be absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, for sure. Well,
it's great sustainability in it all, isn't it? And I think, and very much an empowerment, you know, and claiming that back again, which I think is really important.
Yeah.
Too deadly, mob. Just too deadly.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
We have Zach in the studio, as well as Sarami and Miscellaneous on Urban Dreaming Joy 94.9. So we were talking about your book and everything that you were doing, and just tell us when you expect that to kind of be, when can we hopefully have that on our coffee table?
Well, when I find time around expecting the new one in March. But well,
exactly. That's very exciting.
Yes,
got a little baby coming along.
Oh, tell me about it. So, yes. Yeah, it'll be very exciting, actually. Obviously, last year.
I keep seeing Layla's little posts on Facebook.
Oh, tell me about it. She loves a bit of Facebook. with little pictures
of her belly.
2 years. 2018.
Well, that's a good target.
So that will be 2018 around NAIDOC Week, July 2018.
Great. And I saw
perfect timing.
Saw that you had a big list of all the places that you're hoping to get to.
Yeah, I've spoken to a few elders in all those places, and they're really keen to obviously get involved to share their stories. So obviously their stories are handed down from generation to generation, but. Yeah. I just have to pick the dates right, because I can't. Some of the places in wet season up north, it's going to be tricky to get to. So, just have to pick the right places at the right time. So, and then
just have to go when it's really beautiful, which is a shame.
Dry season during that, but it's also at that point too. A lot of the places I'll be going is actually very traditional. So, if a funeral comes up, I have to postpone, and obviously I know all about that since Layla's from Galawinku, so it'll be interesting, and obviously us blackfellas work on blackfella time, so I'll ring them one day, and they go, yep, come, and then I get there, no, not this week.
That's got to change, I'm telling you now.
You just need a lot of contingency, that's all.
Yeah, so, I've planned it really well, so I'm really excited, because you know, back in high school, like, I dislike writing, I dislike reading, and here I am at 27 years of age writing a book. Like, who would have thought? So probably just write it really, you know, bad grammar and get an editor.
That's why you just get a scribe. Yeah, you just get a scriber and an editor. That's what they do. That's what you pay the big bucks for. And so we touched briefly about the NICI, which is where you studied. Trained,
but also program coordinator there at the moment.
Yes, so. Which is, I suppose, has been a really big influence on your life then. And, you know, I haven't actually heard about it. So you said that it's in Sydney and in Melbourne as well.
So National Indigenous Culinary Institute opened up in 2012 in Sydney. So it was done off the back of some of the, like, best chefs in Australia, Neil Perry, Matt Moran, who you've probably seen on MasterChef.
Yeah.
And they wanted to do something for Aboriginal people wanting to get in hospitality, especially Indigenous people wanting to be able to cook. And, you know, Neil obviously, you know, wanted to do something really, really positive. So he started up, obviously backed National Indigenous Culinary Institute, and it's been going really, really well for four years now. It started in Melbourne just last year.
Yeah.
So it's giving Indigenous people a chance to become high qualified, highly successful qualified chefs in really big restaurants around Sydney and Melbourne. So you've got the Rockpool, you've got Movida, European.
Isn't Charcoal Lane also?
Charcoal Lane's
doing the traineeships with this?
Yeah, Charcoal Lane's doing traineeships as well. And obviously we're talking to them about doing a partnership together. But a lot of the kids that come through, you know, and it's quite daunting when you speak to a young person about becoming a chef, because myself, being a qualified chef, I always say to them, like, why do you want to be a chef? And they're like, oh, well, I want to be like that person on MasterChef or, you know, My Kitchen Rules. And I'm like, being a chef's not like that. It's not like TV. And they're like, okay, I'm not going to be a chef anymore.
Yeah.
So, but it's really good because we've got around six students in Melbourne at the moment working across the Rockpool, the European. Ian Curley's a really high, successful chef. And then we've also got a couple of students up in Sydney at the moment.
And so for the Sydney and Melbourne bases, do you get people nationally? Or is it mainly people from that area, or living in Sydney or living in Melbourne? But do you get like people from NT or WA or?
Well, at the moment, obviously, myself becoming program coordinator around 8 weeks ago, I've started the social media platform now.
Yep.
So people are getting out there. But, a lot of Melbourne, Sydney people were starting to look at it.
Yeah.
But, at the point where we'll probably go down that track of having a base in WA and Darwin.
Right. Perfect.
So what happens is the kids come in, or, you know, young people up to the age of 30, come in and actually, you know, do a 3-week intensive course with our chef teacher in Melbourne and also Sydney, and it gets them job ready so they can go on to, to work at Rockpool, the European, and all those places. So it gives them a leg up to the point where instead of doing 4 years of your apprenticeship, if you do the 3-week program, it takes a year off your apprenticeship and you go in and you can be qualified chef in 3 years. And I remember, and I remember speaking to a young girl that was just in our 3-week program. She's like, I don't know if I want to do this for the rest of my life. And I said, why? She's like, I want to travel. I said, if you get that certificate, you can travel anywhere in the world. She's like, true? And I was like, serious. And then, so she's been loving. She's obviously working in a place down Lygon Street. So I'm really loving seeing more Indigenous people working as chefs.
Yeah.
It's really, really good. Really, the job's been rewarding. And I think a lot of the time when young Aboriginal people come into the hospitality, a lot of young Indigenous people have, you know, personal issues, and I've been able to harness that where I've said to them, when you're working in a kitchen, it's a whole different atmosphere if you're working in an office, because in the kitchen, the head chef has 50 to 60 other chefs to worry about, and he'll look after you. But also at that point where if you leave your personal issues at the back door and then concentrate on yourself, and your work is your escape, you'll find that you'll be able to deal with your personal issues. And, you know, I had one girl obviously move into her own place in Northcote, and she was in a bad situation with a partner, but she was able to believe that, you know, she was able to deal with her personal issues after the advice I gave her. So that's some of the, you know, just some of the success stories we've had. And we've had a couple of people go over to Noma in London and cook for 10 weeks. So, you know, this institute, we're trying to make it the best institute to go if you want to become a chef. So,
wow.
Awesome.
Oh, well, good on you. That sounds amazing. Thank in terms you. Of your role as the program coordinator, and, you know, it's something that you're really passionate about, so it's great to be able to pass that on to other people. And like you said, you know, really bring a spotlight on to our, you know, foods and
culture.
Our culture, yeah.
You know, and also just so good to inspire, isn't it? And knowing that you've passed on a legacy, in a sense, you know, which has been passed on to us, and we keep passing it on. And that's what we need to do, and as educators and as mentors, you know. Yeah, it's so special. I know, like, to teach a kid something, and for their aspirations. For example, you said MasterChef, they look up and think, I want to be like that, you know. But same time, it's something that triggers that little bit of, you know, a flint, like that little bit of flame that's burning, that's a burning desire, you know?
Yeah, and I think a lot of young Aboriginal kids as well, like when they go to job agencies and stuff, they're promised the world. Like, they're promised, they're like, you know, a lot, you know, I'm not saying all job agencies, but a lot of job agencies set the kid up to fail.
Mm.
And for me, if you're not ready, I'll put you in a place to get your confidence up so you can go to these mainstream restaurants, because as I said to some of my board of directors, the last thing I want to do is set these kids up to fail. I said, because you won't be copying it from community, I will. So I'm trying to help them get to that place where they can be a head chef at Rockpool or even European. So it's fantastic. And I'm very passionate about food. You know, even though I've done a lot of stuff in life, I've always come back to food, being a qualified chef. And I just think, you know, as we say, you know, you find your calling in life, and my calling in life is bringing Aboriginal food to the spotlight, like, you know, such as, like, you know, Mark Olive and also Clayton Donovan. But, you know, they're doing so well. But for me, I want to be on a whole different level where I'm not just making, you know, money out of people coming and eating at a restaurant. I'm trying to explore what can I do to actually have Aboriginal, like, non-Aboriginal people's perceptions be changed on Aboriginal people through food. And that's what I want to be able to achieve, especially if you have, just say you have a venue and you're like, obviously a waitress comes up to you and goes, all right, you know, your meal will be with you. Instead of that, she comes to you and goes, would you like to hear the Dreamtime story of the magpie geese? And then obviously dancers come out and stuff like that. You intertwine food, dance, music and culture. People get a whole sense of, like, what is this? What have I been missing out on? And that's my role through NICI and obviously this book as well.
It's about opening the senses, literally.
Yeah.
Wow, brilliant. It's so good. I can't wait for this book to come out. I think it's going to be a huge hit, man, in the community as well as even the world. So, yeah, always good to dream big, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Well done. You got a song for us, haven't you?
Yeah, I do. Just this young fella from Fremantle. He's actually going to be touring with Dan Sultan over the next coming months. His name's Morgan Bain, and this is his song, I Think I've Got You.
Awesome. Let's play it. Ding, 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 ding. Waiting. Here it is. You're enjoying 94.9. The time is 11:41. Urban Dreaming.
Wake up Monday. I know it's too late to say how I feel about you. Cause you put the icing on top of my cake. And I know you feel it too. Now, seems you've gotten your way, cause I'm still in love with you. And over and over and over again, it keeps happening, but will my dreams ever come true? But no, no, I think I've got you, so don't slip away. I think I've got you, don't lead me astray. I think I've got
got you. Don't sign in the rain. There's a storm in our way and it's about to change. I think I've got you. Set off, slip away. I think I've got you. Don't lead me astray. I think I've got you. Don't sign in the rain. There's a storm in our way and it's about to change. I think I've got you. Tuesday, I know it's too late to say that I'm home with you. Cause you know the exact kind of place that I felt like kissing you. Cause it seems that you have gotten your way. Cause I'm still in love with you. And over and over and over again, it keeps happening. But will my dreams ever come true? Oh, no, no. I think I've got you. Set off, slip away. I think I've got you. Don't lead me astray. I think I've got you. Don't stand in the rain. There's a storm in our way and it's about to change. I think I've got you. Set on simple weight. I think I've got you. Don't lead me astray. I think I've got you. Don't stand in the rain. There's a storm in our way and it's about to change. Will it happen so fast? I've been waiting for so long. I can see my reflection in the glass. Sensation I've turned on. Over and over and over and over again.
That was Morgan Bain, I Think I've Got You, a WA boy. Check him out. Check him out on Dan Sultan's tour when Dan goes touring Australia this year, later this year.
This is our new announcer.
Spunk.
Oh,
Dan
Zach.
Dan Sultan.
Oh, Dan. I can't look
Zach's
at him like that.
Zach's a hunk of spunk too.
He's like my brother, that one. I can't look at him like that at all.
Oh, miscellaneous, Ken.
Yeah. But, yeah, Zach's looking very comfortable in the co-hosting seat there, I must say.
No,
looking deadly.
I like being on radio. I don't have to show my face.
Yeah.
You've got a face for radio.
Yeah, I do have a face. Like Dave Hughes, actually.
That's cruel.
I've actually posted a pic of you on our Urban Dreaming Facebook page. So if you do want to check out Zach on there, go to our Facebook page, Urban Dreaming. Yeah, check him out. And
you might get mistaken for a bear.
What do they call him? A ginger bear? What's the bear's
ginger
called?
Ginger bear.
You know what a bear is, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I know. Well,
you know, he'd be more of a cub. He's a cutie.
Cub, yeah.
Cub,
yeah, yeah.
Chubby face.
Chubby cub.
Poor bugger. But he was telling me about that you have been to the Greyhound before and that you do have some dance moves that you do. Because he's a big fan of Miscellaneous, aren't you?
Yeah, well, you know, back in the day when I was, you know.
Back when, those days, because she's so old.
Nine or ten, I used to steal my sister's dancing concert dresses and dance around the house, you know, with Kylie Minogue.
I know.
It's paper so much, balls and stuff like that.
It's so much fun dressing up as a you know.
It's cool.
In female clothing, or if you're a girl in male clothing. I just love. And I'm obsessed with dress-up parties, like costume parties. I just love them. Like, I just love any opportunity that I can dress up, I'll do it. And thank God I make a living from it now.
You know, one time I was with Corrugation Road, and I did a drag, because the boys are meant to dress up in drag and the girls are meant
during
to dress
the
up.
During the show?
Yeah, no, this is after the show.
Right.
And so everyone dressed up, so we thought. I only got dressed up, plus the drag queen of the show, who was Johnny Collard.
Oh, no.
So it was crazy, though, because when I got dressed up, I started thinking, well, I can see why men dress as women, because it's actually quite tantalizing. You're putting on the lacy, you know, gear and the little dresses, whatever, you know, to a certain degree. You think to yourself, it's quite kinky, but it's also wrong. I actually felt a bit wrong as well, you know. But that's my only interpretation,
It's all that
of course.
Taboo stuff, but...
Yeah, but in the end, we went out. It was a fucking amazing night, and I got treated free drinks all night. Man. I know. Well, can't complain with that shit.
Why do you think I'd do it?
My mate Mahali. Actually, I was in the car with him today, and I used to tell him the stories about when I dressed up in a little pink dress, and he's like, brother, he's like, my gay edar has not gone off for you. I said, what do you mean? He's like, nah, you're not gay. I was like, okay.
And you're like, yeah, I know.
Because I always like to, you know, muck around. I'm like, just a little bit? He's like, no. All right, no.
Whereas Mahali's is like off the Richter scale, just say. And we should mention him actually because he's Magnolia's manager.
Yeah,
manager?
My niece, Magnolia Maimaru.
Who went for Miss World.
Yeah, Miss World first. Yes,
and team representative. And she's doing all of that amazing editorial stuff now, and I'm her biggest fan, and just keeping up with her Facebook and the pictures on there. I mean, she is absolutely flawless. So
yeah, she's stunning.
You know, I'm sure she's going to have her. Yeah. And she's so humble, though. That's what's so great.
Yeah, she was over at my house the other day, and we were just talking about like every life stuff, and I guess like you were actually talking about identity. Like, she's the person that actually has to balance coming from a traditional life to obviously mainstream and
Into the mainstream.
Yeah, exactly. You know? And, you know, she was the face of Chadston Spring, Spring 16 or something like that. And what she's been able to accomplish over the last 6 to 12 months is amazing. And she always says, part of the interview, she's like, you know, someone goes, oh, you got discovered at an ATM. And she always says, yes, but I had to knock it back because I wanted to finish my studies.
Yeah.
And a lot of people think Aboriginal people drop out of school, and she's an inspiration to a lot of younger people, like my fiancée Layla is. So, she's doing some deadly
she's
stuff.
She's an inspiration to the world.
Oh, yeah.
Layla's a lot of her family, you know, Juki Mala, and you know, there's a lot of people.
Gurumul.
There's a lot of people that have come out of Elko Island.
Yeah, I know.
You know, a lot of very talented. I don't know what's in the water over there, but there's a lot of talented people coming out of there.
Actually, and speaking of, you were just going to say that, weren't you? I just
read
your mind.
Speaking of talent, yes, we you go.
Yeah, no, the Made in Melbourne Festival. It's actually all happening, and they're starting filming very soon, at the end of next week, actually. And so for those who don't know, Melbourne Festival is actually going to be the first Indigenous festival that's ever been made and catering for Indigenous writers and not directors as such. Unfortunately, they're not having an Aboriginal director at this time. They have a lady who's actually Swiss, which is, it's another way of whatever it may be, that how the producers work. But I think overall it's a brilliant, brilliant platform for our people. And so one of the writers, she's actually, she was the finalist, and she got the application as the winner of the competition, Stephanie Skinner. And her story is called Half. It's a beautiful story, powerful story about identity, which we were speaking about before, and belonging, sense of belonging. That's actually happening, guys, and we're wondering whether you can all get behind us, because it's got a huge Facebook following at the moment, and they're crowdfunding for the Script to Screen. And crowdfunding for Indigenous Script to Screen initiative through Possible is now on. So this is the first time that Made in Melbourne's festival.
And when is it?
It's this year. It's going to be, I think they end up...
November or something?
Yeah, November is when they actually start to show the film. But so they're filming at the end of this week, though. Yeah. And for much needed cause, we have to get... obviously, you know, money talks, bullshit walks. So it's about getting this crowdfunding going and just, you know, putting in what you can.
And like just reading it, like obviously
in your microphone, please.
Oh, sorry. just reading it, obviously, like the movie, the short film's called Half, and you know, a lot of mob out there, obviously, you know, thinking are they black enough or are they white enough, and where do they fit in? So. Looks like such a powerful story.
Yeah, well, Stephanie Skinner is actually she's a light-skinned Aboriginal girl who, I guess, who had to come to terms with her identity, and I guess what better way than to write about it? And the script is beautiful. I've read the script, and it's you can see the poetry as well through the writing, and just knowing that it's something that's going to be strongly representation of of, you know, a part of our history, but also a part of our future. Because, you know, people got to understand that we come in many colours and forms and such a huge diverse range. And it's been like this for a very long time. We're not just one, we are many. Don't you reckon?
Yes, of course.
Miscellaneous.
Yes. So we've got another little song to play for you, which I'm very excited about. It's Matt Corby, and he recently did a rendition of Chains, wasn't it?
Yes.
And I'm a huge fan of both of them, so I'm moist with excitement to to hear this. So,
Zach is just like, he's so joyous.
Take it away, Zach.
I've been hearing all these words all day.
Here we go. Matt Corby with his rendition of Chains.
Sexy man.
You can find more Joycast and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
And that was Matt Corby with Chains, his rendition. You're on Urban Dreaming Joy 94.9. And I can't believe it's come to the end of the show. I don't know how it gets there that quickly, but it's been great having Zach in the studio chatting all about his endeavours, his book. He's, you know, program coordinator, becoming a father, all of that great stuff. So it's been so great having you in the studio, Zach. Thanks for spending your evening with Miscellaneous and Sir Rummy.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate that. I'll have to casual drink at the Greyhound. It's called for to celebrate the expecting...
Well, yes, get it in now before you get no sleep.
Yeah.
For the rest of your life.
Yes, I know. That'd be bad, so.
So you've got 6 months.
Yes. Layla will probably be out drinking before me because I'll be the one at home with the
baby. That's right. Well, she's...
A towel, my hair in the towel and a dressing gown and slippers.
And some curlers in your hair.
Yes, I will.
And what were delightful. You saying in between the break, by the way, Zach? You said that you could turn for someone?
Oh, I did.
He's a big fan girl.
Of Mr. Lanius's cousin.
Yeah, big fan of Cyril.
Cyril Rioli and...
Delicious.
Yeah. Who was the other one?
He
said Cyril and someone else.
Oh, so Matt Corby.
Oh, Matt Corby.
Oh, my God, yes.
His voice will make you turn. So, yeah.
Just quickly, I met that fella and I turned around, he was in front of my face and I was like, holy shit, I don't know what to say or do and I have to get out of your face.
You just patched him.
No, I couldn't. Well, I wish.
Just left.
And then he had to jump on stage and perform. But anyway, guys, yeah, you're on Urban Dreaming and we're about to leave right now. It's really sad. But, yeah, thank you so much
for joining us and we'll see you next Monday, same time, same place.
We've been love you. Bye.
Bye.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.